It's our future that this election decides.
Super chat.
The big parties just need to get over it.
Driving innovation.
Like, yeah, cool, sweet. Let's do it.
Let's vote.
Hack's week-long election party
with Tom Tilley.
Oh, yeah, let's vote. In the lead-up to Saturday's election, Hack is extending to one-hour programs all week. That's why I'm on your radio right now, half an hour earlier than normal. We're dissecting the policies, we're grilling the pollies, all to help you decide who'll get your vote on Saturday. Now, one of the top five issues you said mattered in the Triple J survey was health. So today, we're actually going to speak directly to the Health Minister and look closely at what both major parties are promising on mental health.
I've had a lot of friends that have smoked way too much weed and have had problems with schizophrenia,
negative thoughts like suicide and stuff like that.
Do you think there's enough funding in Australia for mental health services?
Nope.
I was like talking to a robot.
People don't talk about it. Everyone just keeps it hush-hush.
Hack. Let's vote.
All right, love to hear from you today. What would you like to see from our government when it comes to mental health? Do you feel like the system is working? Do you have any suggestions about what they could do better? Give us a call, 1300 055 36. Suicide prevention is a big part of both major parties' policies. It's still the biggest cause of death for young people, and it's particularly bad in regional areas. Our reporter Sarah McVee has taken an in-depth look at the problem we're facing and what's been promised this election. And she starts her story on a bridge in Western New South Wales. And just a warning, this is a really full-on story.
We're at Narromine. We're at Timberbongi Bridge, just over the river.
It's pretty far down.
There was one stage where I was going to throw myself off this. I was 16 years old and I was just having a really rough time at home, having a really rough time at school. It wasn't safe for me at home and I was having a lot of thoughts of I'm pretty worthless, I don't think I'm going to amount to much, and the people and the environment around me was pretty much agreeing with that. And so I thought, you know, there's not really much point. I'll die young and, you know, I don't have to put up with this anymore. I guess the river will just take me away from this place that has been so hard.
Every year, thousands of Australians find themselves, like Sam, on the brink of suicide. Every day, around 7 Australians take their own life. And for every person we lose to suicide, another 30 people attempt it. Suicide is the biggest killer of young people, and young Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are far more likely to die by suicide.
There is a hidden story in our country.
This election, both major parties have released suicide prevention plans, with Labor setting a target to halve the rates of suicide in the next 10 years.
This suicide tragedy, which is what it is something that is very close to me.
The Coalition has been working on major mental health reforms for a while now.
The current approach to treating serious mental health problems and illness is so inadequate and so unrealistic.
You might remember Taylor Clifford from last year. Her sister, Courtney Harris, killed herself after years of treatment, hospital visits, desperation, and deep frustration at the mental health system.
It's not a system, it's broken. And we need a new one.
Months later, the government announced some big changes following a review by the National Mental Health Commission. There was no new money announced at the time, but $350 million of existing funds was reallocated from Canberra to localised primary health networks, or PHNs. The PHNs would be responsible for commissioning mental health services, like other health services, locally in their communities. The Coalition also announced a digital gateway to services and a stepped care model to give people different levels of care depending on their needs. So people with severe or complex mental health issues wouldn't be limited to 10 Medicare-subsidised counselling sessions. Fast forward to election time and there's some new money on the table.
My government will be investing $192 million more in frontline mental health services, including 12 suicide prevention sites around Australia, 10 more Headspace centres.
You'll hear more about Headspace later.
And at the same time, using smartphone and other technologies to make these services more accessible.
The Coalition is stumping up $30 million for e-mental health, including $2.5 million for Lifeline to design a crisis text service and $10 million for regional trials of an online youth mental health platform called Project Synergy.
I say to the people among us at the brink of despair that we must offer more than help. We must offer hope.
When it comes to suicide prevention, the Coalition and Labor look fairly similar. They've both committed to a national suicide prevention strategy. They've both pledged money for research, $12 million from the Coalition and $9 million from Labor. And Labor's also pledged to commission a national suicide register. They both want to trial 12 suicide prevention pilot programs for 3 years funded through the PHNs. Fiona Shand is a senior research fellow working in suicide prevention at the Black Dog Institute.
12 sites for a three-year pilot is great as a starting point. I do think it needs to be longer and it needs to be broader.
First of all, the whole community has to be mobilised to see it as a problem, you know, like we have done with the road toll.
Professor Patrick McGorry is a psychiatrist and the executive director of Origin, the National Centre of Excellence in Youth Mental Health.
Things like publishing a suicide toll in the editorial page of the local newspaper, like they did with the road toll, talking about it more openly, and then practical things like making sure all the police and ambulance people in that region are properly trained to engage with and support distressed people and people who have made suicide attempts, because they're very high risk for a successful attempt.
He welcomes the renewed focus from both sides on suicide prevention, but says there's still not enough money on the table.
It's definitely about money. Mental health has not progressed because it's been seriously underinvested in, and we haven't invested in the right things. And there's no question that we're spending something like 7% of the health budget on a problem that's 13% of the health burden. But if you look at people in the prime of life, it's more like 35-40% of the health burden. So we're trashing whole generations of people here by not looking after them properly.
At the time, someone did call me up and get me through the night, and it was from there that I started getting a little bit more help from friends and stuff. So
it was a friend that stopped Sam jumping off this bridge on the outskirts of town at 16. And it took many more years before he got the professional help he needed to live with his ongoing mental health issues.
Knowing what you know now, what do you wish that little 16-year-old Sam had?
Knowledge would be the biggest one, education. But I was too stubborn to actually talk to people about what I was feeling, and I was also scared of the retaliation. That someone would think I was weak, someone would think I was just making it up. I guess it does make me feel a little bit proud of myself that I've come so far, and I'm still getting there. But yeah, it honestly feels awesome that I can be walking along this bridge and just know that I've come so far from that place.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J with Tom Tilley.
That's Sam speaking to Sarah McVee. And we'll follow up on Sam's story and find out where he got help a little later in the show. And if that intense story has brought up issues for you, you can call Lifeline 13 11 14. That's 13 11 14. On the text line, took a friend of mine over a year to get referred to Headspace. Since then, they are so much better. Someone else says, I've worked in mental health for 12 years. Please emphasise that the poorly acknowledged issue that most mental health issues are caused or exacerbated by trauma. We need to stop putting band-aids on mental health issues and better fund trauma-based prevention services. Louise has called in. Louise, what would you like to see the government do better?
Put more funding into giving people an education during school to let kids know that if you are suffering, to not be afraid of it and to understand that there are people out there that can help you.
And where you can go looking for that help too, right?
Yeah, 100%. So I'm 20 now. I was diagnosed when I was 16 informally, because you can't be formally diagnosed until you're 18 with bipolar. And I hated myself for it because I had no idea what was going on. And I find a lot of my friends that have struggled as well, they didn't want to live with the stigma of having a mental illness, so they hid from it. And at the end of the day, just made themselves worse until they grew the courage to realise, not even the courage, until they grew the knowledge to realise that it wasn't something to be ashamed of.
And where did you get help from once you realised you needed it?
So my sister's a nurse at the Children's Hospital. So she admitted me into her ward. And from then, it was just counselling.
Amazing. Well, Louise, keep listening. I'd love to hear your thoughts about what the major parties are offering on mental health and whether it sort of makes you feel more comfortable that young people will be better looked after as time goes on. Thanks so much for the call.
That's all right.
Maddie from Penrose, we actually spoke to you about your cousin's suicide 7 months ago. What do you think needs to change in the system?
Everything, really. Like the 12 or 10 psychiatrist appointments and being discharged from hospital after a week and thrown back in the big bad world, it's just completely wrong. These people need more help, but they need to be helped without being in a hospital.
Yeah, well, we're going to speak to the Minister for Health about what happens after you go to acute care at a hospital and whether the follow-up has improved. Thanks so much for the call, Maddie.
No worries, buddy.
In the studio, we have Professor Ian Hickey, who's a leading expert on suicide and mental health policy. He's the co-director of the Brain and Mind Centre at the University of Sydney, and he's here to help us understand, firstly, the scope of the mental health challenge, but also what's been promised by the major parties. Firstly, Ian, is the suicide problem getting worse for young Australians?
Best we can tell, yes, it's heading in that direction,
Wow. Sadly.
This has happened elsewhere in the world with changes in employment and changes in people's notion of the future. So best we can tell, it is on the slide. It's worse actually for younger men and then men in their 20s to 50s where suicide rates are undoubtedly going up. And in Australia, they're not always equal. So those areas that have employment problems, education problems, particularly where youth unemployment is higher, including our Indigenous communities, rates of youth suicide and of suicide overall are higher. So there are better and worse places in Australia to be, particularly rural and regional areas really need a focus and new ways of doing things. It's all very well to say new money doing things old ways, no result. So reform plus monies, and I'd put the particular emphasis here on technologies and engagement with young people, has to be part of the mix.
Okay, and what do you think of the offerings of the two major parties when it comes to suicide prevention?
I love election campaigns. You know, we had trouble getting suicide prevention. Well, you've got to throw money, effort and leadership. What was great to see the Sunday before last was the Leader of the Opposition stand up in his election launch and say suicide prevention matters, 12 trials. And then have the Prime Minister on Sunday say suicide prevention, 12 trials and more. So it takes a bit of community action. The great thing about the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition going around the country prior to elections, going to real communities, meeting real young people like the young woman in Woi Woi who asked the Opposition Leader, or the people in Geelong who asked the Prime Minister, is actually that engagement. So young people have done a great job asking the key people. Now we've got a response, a substantial response on both sides, but the response on the government side is considerably larger.
All right, well, there are a few key differences. One of them is that, and this doesn't relate to money, it just relates to a target. Labor have set a target of reducing suicide by half within 10 years, and we'll ask the Health Minister why the government hasn't done the same thing. Do you think a target like that is helpful?
Well, a target is something we've argued for, but you've got to have a clear pathway of how to get to that target. So we can all, aspirationally, it's important to say that's where we're going. But we also have to clearly map how we get there, what it costs, and by doing what. As previous Minister Mark Butler in the Labor government, the Gillard government, remarked, we could throw twice as much money or three times as much money and it may not change. So you've got to have a clear goal and a clear process for getting there. So I'm one of those things, people who do think targets matter,
Okay. But
only when they're linked with serious planning and in this situation doing things different, engaging the communities locally. All the regions of Australia, about 50, are really different. If you're in the middle of Alice Springs or you're in the middle of the Gippsland or you're up in a large Queensland town, you're in a different place with different problems. So planning.
What if we miss the target? Is that going to be just even more depressing?
No, well, you've got to have progressive. If you say, look, 50% in 10 years, you've got to report, which is the National Commission I'm on does, annually where you're going. You've got to review what is working. Both sides have committed to research and development, really important. But you have to look at suicide attempts and completed suicides, and you have to map more than say where we be in 10 years, a bit like the budget, where we be in 10 years, who knows. You've got to say year on year, what is working, more into that. What is not working, stop it. Take the money away from that. So you've got to have some real accountability in this. And I think that's one of the issues is promises are very easy to make in election campaigns. You've got to put the reform and then the accountability in so we have, you know, a lot of discussion between election campaigns. Are we really getting there?
One thing the government seems to be taking the lead on is digital mental health tools and services as part of their promise. There's $30 million allocated for that. Do you have any sense of how that money will be spent and how it will look? Will we be finding new apps to help us access professional services or what do you think is going to happen in this space?
This is really important, and this involves the Prime Minister directly. Previously in his Communication Minister role, obviously he's a person who knows about these things. He has taken a direct personal interest. So the government, the Abbott government, to its credit, invested in something called Project Synergy back at the 2013 election. I'm associated with that thing myself. It works. It puts the command of the system in your hand through your smartphone or through your mobile or through your iPad, however you do it. So it turns the conventional system on its head, particularly for young people. You're in charge. The trials we're doing with the New South Wales Mental Health Commission at the moment in Broken Hill, in Western Sydney, on the Central Coast, demonstrate how young people can get into a system through their actual mobile technology. Mm. That is a revolution in healthcare. So I think the Prime Minister on this level has done a really smart thing. He said $10 million a year for the next 3 years to grow that Project Synergy in a series of partnerships trials with Lifeline, with MindSpot, things for veterans, more headspace-related young people with technologies. That's the way to go.
Makes a lot of sense. On the text line, I live in rural Victoria and e-mental health failed me. At a time of crisis, I didn't have an internet connection or signal to reach a helpline. That is a cruel irony that you've got the former communications minister who was pitching an NBN that wasn't delivering the same speeds as what Labor were offering, also pitching digital mental health services when the connection might not be there.
I think we can say in this country, neither party has yet delivered a functioning NBN across the country. Labor didn't do it when they were in and we're still struggling to get it. So one of the biggest constraints in the digital age is adequate and affordable access to the internet countrywide. Big issue.
You're listening to Hack. We're talking about health and particularly mental health. 4 days out from the election, could this swing your vote? On the text line, mental health is a more important election issue than most pollies grasp. Well, one of the main ways they do try and grasp it and try and help young people, particularly in this space, is through Headspace. There's bipartisan support for it, and many of you might have actually gone to a Headspace. Lots of you wouldn't have as well. So how do they work? And are they actually making much of a difference? Sarah McVee went to a Headspace in Dubbo in Western New South Wales.
Hello.
Hello, welcome to Headspace Dubbo.
So,
I'm Nick. I'm one of the Youth Access and Awareness Workers here at Headspace. And in here, this is where people first come in. So obviously it's a bit bright and colourful. We have our selfie wall.
Since 2006, Headspace centres like this one have been popping up around the country. Headspace provides early intervention mental health services to 12 to 25-year-olds at nearly 100 clinics around the country and online at eHeadspace. They're often called a one-stop shop. At Headspace in Dubbo, you can get access to counsellors and support groups, help with tenancy or Centrelink issues, and you can see a GP or a sexual health nurse. Headspace also has 6 early psychosis units, a model developed by world-leading psychiatrist and former Australian of the Year, Patrick McGorry.
They're linked to Headspace sites, but they're more specialised. So we have mobile teams that can go into the home and provide home-based treatment even in the middle of the night. We have family support, case management systems to look after people along with psychiatrists for between 2 and 5 years after the onset of the psychosis, which is what's called the critical period in which all the damage is done by these illnesses. And if we can effectively treat people during that period, they can have much better recoveries and much lower suicide rates.
I came to Headspace in February of 2015. So I started seeing them because I'd hit another low point in my life.
Sam, who you heard from earlier, had escaped his suicidal thoughts at 16 with the help from his friends. But early last year at 21, they returned. He'd lost his job after an injury and his depression had escalated. Sam's girlfriend dragged him to Headspace.
They were basically new to town, but I'd heard of them previously and knew them as a really great youth service.
Sam got counselling and joined a support group and started seeing improvements in his mental health.
It felt really comfortable. As much as I was struggling and as much as I was resisting any help, it was just so helpful, so encouraging and such a place I could belong. I didn't feel alone anymore.
Headspace has been really successful in accessing a really wide range of young people.
Dr. Natalie Gray is the Chief Medical Officer at Headspace HQ, the national organisation that oversees the local branches. In the year to June 2015, almost 60,000 young people accessed a Headspace centre.
We have services in both regional, rural, some remote as well as metro areas. And so we've focused really hard on trying to enable young people who wouldn't otherwise have services accessible to them be able to access a Headspace.
An independent review of Headspace released late last year backed that up. It found that Headspace is accessible to young people. The review also found that Indigenous Australians made up 7.4% of Headspace clients, which is double their representation in the general population. It found that suicidal ideation reduced significantly and self-harm decreased too among Headspace clients. The report also found that young people whose mental health improved also benefited from economic outcomes.
The number of days that Headspace clients were unable to work or study dropped significantly, from 7.6 days at the start of Headspace treatment to 3.1 days at the last occasion of service.
But it's not an entirely rosy picture. The evaluation found that only 13% of Headspace clients showed clinically significant improvement in psychological symptoms, and 4.5% actually showed clinically significant worsening. Also, the review found that the average cost of a Headspace visit is $339.
You know, we have to see much better outcomes. Each time a young person is seen by Headspace, it costs 5 to 7 times what it does to see a GP.
John Mendoza is a former chair of the National Advisory Council on Mental Health and former chair of a Headspace centre in regional Queensland.
You wouldn't characterise it as a failure, but there are substantive issues that need to be dealt with. There has to be real reform.
He's critical of Headspace headquarters. He reckons they've had too tight a grip on local clinics and have made bad decisions about where Headspace centres have been located.
There's a service in the centre of Adelaide that had no clients last year. Extraordinary, but true.
The federal government has already begun loosening Headspace HQ's grip. Its budget has been roughly halved and CEO Chris Tanti has resigned.
The current Headspace board, as I understand, finishes this week. The current CEO of Headspace finishes this week.
John Mendoza says in this new phase, Headspace needs to change direction. He says there should be a renewed emphasis on Headspace taking the lead in upskilling GPs, because no matter how much Headspace is expanded, it will never meet everyone's needs.
There are 13,000 front doors to general practice around the country with 30,000 GPs. That's the engine room of primary healthcare in Australia. And Headspace is largely disengaged and ignored, building the capacity within that huge service engine.
The changes have led to speculation about Headspace's future under the coalition. There were concerns the money for early psychosis would be redistributed and the services would be lost. Here's the PM being grilled on Q&A last week.
Why is the government stopping funding for youth early psychosis programs?
Well, the answer is we are not.
The coalition has now said that Headspace funding is guaranteed, including for the early psychosis units. They'll be funded through the primary health networks. You know the ones I was talking about earlier? They're local health administrators responsible for commissioning healthcare in their own regions. So the money will go through them, but they have to choose to give it to Headspace. And if a particular Headspace has issues and the PHN doesn't want to fund it, they'll have to get sign-off from the minister to close it down. The coalition also committed $20 million to 10 new Headspace centres, bringing the total number to 110 by 2019. By comparison, Labor has committed to funding the existing Headspace centres and 6 existing early psychosis units.
Every model of care can be improved.
Patrick McGorry has been on the phone to the PM over the past few weeks, advocating for the protection of Headspace and the early psychosis units. He agrees that Headspace HQ had too much power, but says overall it's a successful model that should be supported.
Now, we've spent years developing these evidence-based models. We want certainty that they're going to continue.
Headspace has changed my life immensely. They've just been instrumental in me still being alive, really. Yeah.
Sam has been right on the edge. For him, it's been a mixture of medication, support from friends, and the therapy and coping strategies he's learnt at Headspace in Dubbo that's kept him alive.
Just looking at dirty brown water, just thinking that, you know, my body could have been found in there when I was younger. But to be able to stand here and be okay is pretty awesome. It's pretty empowering to think that, you know, I've come so far. It's just, I have so much more to live for.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J with Tom Tilley.
A really positive end to Sam's story there from Sarah McVie in Dubbo, talking about Headspace. And Julia on the text line says, I went to Headspace for a year for depression and anxiety and my counsellor did not help me at all. I'd love to hear your experiences with Headspace. Has it helped you? Give me a call, 1300 055 36. Ian Hickey is in the studio from the Brain and Mind Centre. Ian Hickey, we heard some pretty strong criticism there about Headspace. We heard that it's really expensive to operate. We heard John Mendoza say that it sees very few clients at some centres and that in many cases it's hard to see how it shows clinical improvement on any significant level with a lot of its clients. So what's going on there? Are there major problems with it?
It's a great program that needs to grow up and get better. So we, in fact, had the Prime Minister visit our centre down here in central Sydney on the weekend, on Saturday, and meet with young people and their families specifically. And there we have not only the Headspace, but the co-located other specialist services. So if you're someone who doesn't get better for a year, you don't see the same person for a year, you actually need to move on. And those people got more severe, like early psychosis or bipolar disorder, they need well beyond what a current Headspace offers. So we've got to put Headspace in combination locally. And the government's great credit, it took that decision last November and it's being implemented. As Pat McGorry's made clear, we need to make sure now the program continues to grow, but it delivers quality and it actually links with other local services. So like all programs, it's got to grow up and get better and be part of the reform process that the Prime Minister's personally backing.
So do you think it's a good thing that these local administrators, the primary health networks, will have more control over their local Headspace?
I'm a strong supporter of that. Headspace has got to be in the reform along with the drug and alcohol services, the suicide prevention service and others, so that locally, if you're living in Townsville or you're living in the Gippsland or you're living in Geelong, all those services funded by all sorts of governments work together and they don't all say, I'm separate, I'm Headspace, I'm special, or I'm your local other service and I'm special and I'm not working with the guys down the road. That doesn't cut it. So we got to do what we showed the Prime Minister on the weekend, our own service, our own local early psychosis service funded by the state government, working hand in glove with the Headspace service funded by the federal government. So if you're a young person, you come in, we take care of you no matter how severe your problem.
Ian, great to hear your insights. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks so much, Tom.
That's Professor Ian Hickey from the Brain and Mind Centre at Sydney University. Hi, Tom. I use Headspace and it helped me so much. I don't think I'd be here without their help. Now, yesterday we introduced you to two first-time undecided voters, Dom and Chloe.
Let's vote on Hack with Tom Tilley.
Hi, my name's Chloe. I'm from Newcastle. I'm 18 years old.
Hi, my name's Dom. I live in Brisbane. I'm 20 years old. I'm a uni student. I study law and journalism in Russian.
What's important for me this election is which politicians, I guess, address the environment most.
The environment and in particular jobs.
Hack. Let's vote.
Now, right now, neither of those two know exactly who they're going to vote for, or they do have their leanings, and they're going to listen to each Hack program all this week and we'll follow their reactions. Now, Dom comes from a Liberal voting family. Chloe's mum is a Greens voter. But yesterday, they both came to very similar views on education.
Look, both Kim and Simon talked about this sort of equitable difficulty with, you know, accessibility, getting into tertiary education. There's, you know, a lot of different social, economical backgrounds for people to get into this education. And I feel like one thing that might fix all that accessibility might be free tertiary education.
Michael made a really interesting point about the positive aspects of deregulation, and I think I'd really love to see our generation entitled to a free education as our parents did.
What a wonderful solution, Chloe and Dom there. And right after we speak to the Health Minister and the Shadow Mental Health Minister, we'll find out which major party has won them over on the issues of health and mental health. But first, let's find out what else is going on in the world today with news headlines. Here's Kat McGann.
Headlines now. A political marketing researcher from the Australian National University says a study's found the major parties should rethink political scare ads. Not one respondent to the study liked or was swayed by negative advertising. The inquest into the Lindt Cafe siege has heard gunman Manharon Monis was killed when tactical police shot him at least 13 times as they forced their way into the building. Britain's Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn is facing a vote of no confidence from his party as part of the Brexit fallout. 87% of Labour MPs voted to remain in the European Union in the referendum. And meanwhile, the leaders of Germany, Italy and France say the European Union won't hold talks with Britain until it triggers the formal process to leave the trading bloc. The former New South Wales Upper House MP Eddie Obeid has been found guilty of misconduct after lobbying on behalf of businesses in which he had a secret financial interest. The Victorian government is introducing laws to bar serious criminals like rapists and murderers from getting community corrections orders. The orders, which let criminals serve their sentence in the community, were introduced by the former coalition government to replace suspended prison sentences. And finally, researchers at Newcastle University believe the New South Wales Central Coast could be home to a rare new frog species known as the stuttering frog because its vocalisation sounds like it's stuttering.
Thank you very much, Kat. We'll catch you tomorrow at 5:30.
Thanks, Tom. See you tomorrow.
Our sister station, Double J, has just dedicated a month to punk music.
Sod off, I say.
To celebrate, they're releasing a double album compilation featuring iconic songs from the last four decades. From the early days of The Clash and Dead Kennedys, through to artists like Refused, Descendants, NoFX, and Blink-182. The Punk is Calling compilation. Out now.
Hack. It's our future that this election decides.
Super chat.
The big parties just need to get over it.
Riding innovation.
Like, yeah, cool, sweet. Let's do it.
Let's vote.
Hack's week-long election party.
With Tom Tilley.
Yes, we are bringing you one-hour-long programs this week, starting at 5 o'clock each day, taking you through to 6. We're taking an in-depth look at what the major parties are offering so you can make an informed vote when you go to the polls this Saturday. And we'd love to hear your reaction. Save this text number into your phone so you can jump into the conversation at any moment. 0439 757555. Save this number, 0439 757555. Loads of texts coming in on mental health. We've been talking about that all day today. On the text line, a young family friend committed suicide a few weeks ago in Lithgow, west of the Blue Mountains, and she had to wait a week for psychologists to come to town. It was too long. Lithgow is desperate for a Headspace. Someone else says, I've never got to experience Headspace's services. The clinic near me was booked out 2 months in advance. Yes, we are talking mental health. And the Minister, Susan Ley, has been on Hack before. And we're about to speak to her right now. As you heard in Sarah McVee's package earlier, Susan Ley actually had direct contact with the family of Courtney Harris, whose story of suicide featured on Hack last year. Susan Ley dropped into the Mildura ABC to speak to us earlier today. Susan, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Last year we had a really interesting conversation with you on the show. You actually responded to someone that was at the centre of a story we did. We covered the suicide of a young woman called Courtney Harris, and her sister, Taylor, made a really impassioned plea about changes to the system. Here's a part of that.
The current approach to treating serious mental health problems and illness is so inadequate and so unrealistic. It's not a system. It's broken. And we need a new one.
Now, soon after that, you made announcements about improvements to the system that she said was broken. How is that fitting into your election pledge and how is that work continuing?
The reforms that we announced allow mental health funding to reach people depending on their needs. So before we introduced these reforms, we had a one-size-fits-all via Medicare, and it simply supported people with a number of appointments to a psychologist. We've said that we need to spread that funding to, yes, leave that as one option, to have an early intervention counselling option for others, and to have integrated wraparound support for those who really need extra care. The funding for those extra care packages is going to flow from our reforms. So that change to policy is already in place. And importantly, it allows a system that has been fragmented where the different services provided by primary care, if you're at your GP, by a mental health nurse who might be also in your general practice, by the acute system of the public hospital and so on, all join up and you do not get moved from one to the other without that continuity of care that is so important.
Minister, we spoke earlier about Headspace and you've committed to another 10 Headspaces, which will take us to 110. You've also guaranteed Headspaces funding till at least 2018. Now, last year you released an independent report that looked at its effectiveness. And we heard earlier in the show that the evaluation found that only 13% of Headspace clients showed clinically significant improvement in psychological symptoms. Just 13%. What's going on there?
Headspace did its own evaluation and it actually came back very positively. And
so that's not independent?
Of course it's independent.
But they did their own evaluation.
They organised it and it's sufficiently independent because otherwise it wouldn't pass scrutiny, and it does. The point I want to make is that Headspace is recognised as an international best practice in youth mental health intervention, and we're very proud of it. It's the brand that the Australian government supports.
Okay, there are questions about how many people it's helping. John Mendoza, who we heard from earlier, who's the former chair of the National Advisory Council on Mental Health and former chair of a Headspace Centre in regional Queensland, said on average each Headspace has just three clients walking through the door each day, and he said that one in Adelaide in the CBD had no clients in 2015. Why are such small numbers of people walking through the door of our Headspaces?
I don't think John Mendoza is referring to Headspace. I believe he's looking at another aspect of the youth mental health system. There's absolutely no doubt that we have lots and lots of young people in every Headspace every day. And we know that while...
So is he wrong about the one in Adelaide?
I'm not aware of the particular one, the particular...
In Wakefield Street.
...facility that he's talking about. So without making comment, I'm going to address that separately when I know exactly what he is talking about. But John was part of our roundtable with the Prime Minister in Sydney on Saturday, and he was absolutely delighted with the additional funding, and he certainly didn't raise any concerns with me.
Well, he raised concerns with me that they're not seeing enough people. And not all of them, but some of them are not seeing enough people, and there needs to be some reconsideration about which Headspaces are actually working and seeing enough people to be actually doing something.
That will be part of the organisation's ongoing accreditation and quality support, which is all done from Headspace National Office. But I simply say that the Headspaces that I visit on not a daily basis, but frequently, are very busy. They've got lots going on, and that's happening whether I'm walking in the door or not.
What are the challenges with it, though? Are there elements of Headspace you need to improve?
I believe that the board and the CEO of Headspace would say we always need to improve. Any organisation needs to continually improve to... Headspace
is supported. So what are the improvements that are needed?
I believe Headspace is working extremely effectively. I'm not going to say improvements
so
need to be
with
made.
It?
There are no problems with Headspace that are not being managed in the normal way by the team that advises, monitors, accredits and works with Headspace.
So do you know what the problems are?
Well, I'm not going to describe problems that I do not believe are there in any systemic way.
You're listening to Susan Lee, the Health Minister, on Hack. On the text line, people think Headspace is the bee's knees because they're so heavily funded that they can afford to spend on top-notch marketing when essentially they are just an intake and referral service. Somebody else, Justine, says Headspace Coffs Harbour helped me grow so much and saved my life. Let's talk about Medicare for a moment. It has been an election issue. Labor said the government were going to privatise it. The Coalition said that was a baseless scare campaign. One clear policy difference, though, has emerged on Medicare. It's the amount of money doctors get from government in Medicare rebates. Under the Coalition, it will stay frozen at a constant level. Under Labor, they will unfreeze it and pay more Medicare rebates to doctors. So let's find out how that could affect you, particularly when it comes to mental health. Shalala Medora has the story.
I have good periods and bad periods. You know, I have weeks where I really struggle to get out of bed and other times where I'm completely from the outside normal.
That's Kate from Newcastle in New South Wales. She's been living with anxiety and depression for at least 6 years. Last year, her illness worsened. She had suicidal thoughts and eventually lost her job. Strapped for cash, Kate dropped her private health insurance.
I had to go and seek a bulk billing GP to go to, purely because I couldn't afford... I didn't have $70, $75 to give to the doctor and then wait for Medicare to give me $35 back. And, you know, it was just money that I didn't have. You know, my doctor referred me to a bulk billing therapist, which is actually provided by Medicare as part of a mental health plan.
Without explanation, Kate was told she didn't fit the criteria for a bulk billed therapist.
I was really confused. It didn't say in what manner. You know, if it was because I had earned too much previously or where I lived or anything like that. So it was, yeah, very disappointing. No one, you know, in the most vulnerable of states needs to be told, sorry, we can't help you. It's a bit of a kick in the guts.
The fact is, many people experiencing mental health concerns will see their GP first before deciding on a care plan. The Medicare rebate given to GPs, that is the money the government gives to doctors for individual services, was frozen in 2013. So while the cost of living has increased, doctors who bulk bill will effectively have a pay freeze, meaning they have to pick up the additional costs themselves. Doctors have warned that'll force them to ditch bulk billing as a result.
Some of my doctors are closing their doors as we speak.
That's Dr. Ewan McPhee. He's a GP in the central Queensland town of Emerald and the president of the Rural Doctors Association.
Some of them, particularly with our undeclared economic recession in the bush, just simply cannot afford to keep working. Some are working second jobs. And we're seeing several towns in my own region of central Queensland where their practices are on life support and are at great risk of closing.
Labor has pitched this election as a battle over Medicare, the government program that allows all Australians access to health services for little or no cost.
This election on July the 2nd will be a referendum on the future of Medicare.
The opposition leader, Bill Shorten, labelled the government's proposal to outsource Medicare's payment system as the start of an American user pays health system.
We remain absolutely committed to put forward our positive plans for healthcare in this country, our positive plans to help save Medicare from the dismantling by Mr Turnbull piece by piece, brick by brick of our Medicare system.
Labor's attack has forced the government into a corner. Here's the Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull.
I am making a solemn commitment, an unequivocal commitment, that every element of Medicare services will continue to be delivered by government. Full stop.
Labor has promised to unfreeze the Medicare rebates, which, mind you, it froze in the first place, and that means doctors will get slightly more money for services. And Labor will remove a freeze on rebates for diagnostic and pathology services, so things like blood tests and x-rays. The government says bulk billing rates are at an all-time high, with 85% of services falling under the Medicare system. But as Dr. McPhee explains, that doesn't necessarily mean you get to walk out of a practice without opening your wallet.
Possibly 80% of people who visit a doctor pay a fee now. About 12% of the population use over 45% of the bulk billing item numbers. These are often the people with our most chronic and complex diseases who use the bulk of the Medicare items. It's not 85% of visits to the doctor that get bulk billed.
Hack
on Triple J.
Shalala Medora reporting, and if this is bringing up any issues for you, you can call Lifeline for help, 13 11 14. Let's put some of those concerns about Medicare and bulk billing to the Minister for Health, Susan Lee. Susan, we heard in that story that the amount of money the government provides to GPs will go up under Labor because they'll undo the freeze on Medicare rebates. Under your coalition government, the freeze on payments will continue until 2020. What do you say to people like Kate, who we just heard from in that story, who are worried that access to bulk billing services will decline and therefore impact on the mental health treatment she gets?
I would reassure Kate that bulk billing services in Australia today are at record high levels. They have never been higher.
But will that continue unless if you guys don't give GPs more money?
I'm very confident that it will, but Kate's example, I'm sure, requires an integrated model of care, and our primary healthcare homes, which we've announced and which we will start rolling out, are all about integrated care for the top 20% of patients with chronic and complex conditions.
Minister, can you explain in simple terms why the government's not undoing the freeze on GP payments? Because obviously their costs will go up over time, so you imagine they would need to have their payments from the government go up as well. Otherwise, they would be squeezed and potentially pulling back on the services they offer the public. So why aren't you undoing the freeze on GP payments?
The circumstances of our national accounts, and as a health minister, I'm very focused on the economy and its ability to fund through revenue the expenses that we undertake in health, in social security and education. So I completely understand that it is entirely appropriate at this point that we do not lift the freeze. But I want to make a couple of other points about revenue to general practice. The Medicare rebate is not the only source of revenue. There are incentives for bulk billing patients, incentives to support doctors in signing people up to the e-health record. So the entire
landscape of general practice does not just consist of one payment through Medicare.
Okay, Minister Lee, you talked there in your answer to why you're not raising the Medicare rebate. You talked about national accounts and overall spending and I guess the challenging times that we face as we try and bring the budget back into surplus. What hope can you give young people that more and more of their taxes won't be spent looking after an ageing population?
We need to put Medicare on a sustainable footing, and we started that in the last term of government, and we will continue that if we're re-elected on Saturday. So that's vital, because if we leave Medicare spending to simply rise at its current rate, it will indeed eat up half of the budget probably by 2050. I recognise that there's up to 30% of inefficient spending in the health system. And if you talk to anyone who works in health, if you talk to anyone, Professor Dorothy Keefe, who was appointed by the South Australian government, advised them that in their state, there's 30% of inefficient spending in health. So what it means is that for governments to, you know, to save money and to cut out that inefficiency, we aren't going to affect patient care. We're actually going to improve patient care.
Labor have committed to a target of halving the number of suicides within 10 years. Why haven't the coalition committed to a similar target?
Our expert reference group implementing the response to the National Mental Health Commission's report suggested not to talk about targets, and we've taken their advice. Personally, I'd like to say we're going towards zero, difficult though that may be. And I think targets are artificial. I think what really matters is the commitment we're making, the dollars we're putting on the table, and the fact that we're starting straight away. In fact, the reforms that we introduced at the end of last year have effectively been turbocharged with another additional $192 million announced by the Prime Minister at our launch. And what's quite disappointing is that Labor's efforts on suicide prevention are not even going to happen in their first year if they win government. We are already starting this important work.
Thank you so much for taking the time to get into such a great level of depth on these policy issues that affect so many young Australians.
Anytime, Tom.
Hack. Let's vote.
That's the Health Minister, Susan Lee, giving us an in-depth interview, especially on mental health. I'd love to hear your reaction. Send us a text, 0439 757 555. Will mental health policy sway your vote? On the text line, I work in Bulk Billing Mental Health Centre in Western Sydney. We treat so many patients who would be lost without our services. And someone else says, of course, bulk billing is at a record high. Australia's population is constantly growing. Someone else says, the Libs may not privatise Medicare outright, but it still faces death by a thousand cuts over the last four decades.
Hack. There's a massive lack of like education for a lot of young voters. It always seems like there's bad choices and no good choice.
I'd say that, especially this election, like it's our future that this election decides, so it's really important that we vote and that we have our say, especially as a young generation.
Let's vote. Hack's week-long election party.
All right, let's see what Labor have to offer. Katie Gallagher is in the studio. She's a Shadow Minister for Mental Health. Katie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
We just heard Susan Lee say that if Labor were voted in, your suicide prevention plan wouldn't kick in till after a year after you came into power. And when I looked at the Labor policy on suicide prevention, it does say that a shortened Labor government will develop a national suicide reduction strategy. So is your plan to come up with a plan?
No, not at all. I mean, we have outlined in our policy the idea that we want to support those 12 pilots that was recommended by the National Mental Health Commission. There is a process to go to identify those 12 locations. There's one we've outlined in our policy, which is in the Kimberley region of WA, where the suicide rates are incredibly high. But in terms of the other ones, I've spoken to the suicide prevention stakeholders, experts across Australia. We do need to make sure that those 12 pilots are selected in the right locations to make sure that we are getting a good evaluation once those pilots start.
Okay, and Labor has pledged a target of reducing suicide by half within 10 years, but I guess it's not much point having a target unless you have a clear plan how to get there. What is the plan?
Yeah, so that's part of putting together that, having that national suicide prevention strategy. The 12 pilots will obviously be a key element of those, because they are going to get the extra resourcing and implement what's called a systems-based approach to suicide prevention, which is where you get, basically that's code for every health service in a particular region, social support services working together to deliver the same outcome. You know, some people will say to you, the quickest way to reduce Australia's suicide toll is to make sure that those people leaving acute mental health centres in hospitals are followed up in the first 2 weeks after they leave a hospital. So that could be part of it. There's a lot of ideas there, but we do need to get it right if we are going to see that suicide toll halve over time.
We've had a lot of people texting in during the show asking about the 10 counselling sessions that you get under Medicare. A lot of people saying that's not enough. Why isn't Labor offering an alternative on that front?
Well, I guess in this area we are in agreement with the government in terms of better access. Those programs where you can get that support, the 10 sessions, offers a particular type of intervention. But for many people, we're needing to look at how they are provided with support, particularly if there's not a health professional able to use better access in some areas of Australia. And this is, I think, a point that's been raised on your show, Tom, around access for people in remote and rural parts of Australia. And that's the idea behind those primary health networks, actually having some resources to intervene and to provide particular supports to people. So better access does offer absolutely high quality care for some people, but we also need to have a look at how we provide a range of services, particularly for young people and particularly for young people where there are a lack of health professionals.
Rebecca's called in. Rebecca, you've got concerns about Headspace.
Yeah, well, I try to access Headspace for my daughter. I'm a registered nurse. I work in the healthcare system. I also work in mental health as well. And when I tried to get help for my daughter, Headspace told me that they couldn't help because she was too far gone. Now, at the time my daughter was 20 years old, she was self-harming. She wouldn't get out of bed. I would have to, at times when I would get into her house, I would walk over garbage bags with maggots crawling across the floor. This girl had problems, and I could not access any help for her. Now, I would beg. I would go to the cafeteria and find the psychiatrist and beg them for help.
Sounds full on, Rebecca. What do you make of that situation, Katie Gallagher? Is that a failing from Headspace, or is that not the kind of service it's meant to provide?
Well, Headspace traditionally is an early intervention model of primary mental health care. So it would, you know, it specialises in, you know, low acuity, so people who are less serious in terms of the mental illness they have, and where early intervention supports would work best.
So what's the situation there? Like, well, Rebecca was in, is she meant to go to the hospital instead?
Well, in that instance, and it's a bit hard. It's a bit hard without knowing all the details, but in that instance, I would say that the state systems, and I'm not trying to pass the buck here, but I would say that they are normally the area which would provide that high level of crisis and high level of care, either through the hospital or through a child and adolescent mental health service, which is run by the states and territories.
All right, Rebecca, thanks for your call. I hope you guys can work through the challenges there. On the text line, I have a chronic health condition that is required monthly blood tests and doctor visits over the last 4 years. If it weren't for bulk billing, I couldn't afford to be treated. Apprentice Jacob from the Central Coast says, I have to work so hard just to pay my bills for free Medicare and free study. Lots of people text in. You can join the conversation, 0439 75 7555. We are speaking to the Shadow Minister for Mental Health, Katie Gallagher, getting a sense of what Labor are offering on mental health this election. Now, Katie, I had Ian Hickey in the studio before. Mm-hmm. He was very excited about the Coalition's promise to spend $30 million on digital mental health services. Where's Labor in this space?
Yeah, look, I'm very supportive of digital mental health. This is actually part of the reform agenda that's already been rolled out as part of the response to the National Mental Health Commission's report. And this is something that we would certainly want to look at more over time. And
why haven't you promised anything?
Well, look, I don't have the information available to me about the specific projects that Ian was speaking about. But
it's about the level of commitment. We're talking about $30 million, which is quite a lot in that space, but we didn't see anything of that nature from Labor. Why not?
Well, as I said, some of the focus on the prevention programs already has an e-health component to it. So I would want to see how those were rolled out before committing to a specific project. But I absolutely agree that particularly for young people who are using technology as a way of life, if there are good ways of reaching them, reaching out to them and providing them with appropriate support, then that's absolutely something that Labor would support. But we haven't specifically allocated $30 million. Our focus certainly in the last 6 months has been to save the early psychosis centres from closure and from making sure that Headspace was supported into the future, which we did get a commitment from the Prime Minister on Sunday, thankfully.
Katie Gallagher, great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
It's Katie Gallagher, the Shadow Minister for Mental Health. All right, we are nearing the end of the show, which means it's time to check in with our first-time undecided voters, see how they're reacting to today's in-depth look at mental health.
Let's vote on Hack.
Hi, my name's Chloe. I'm from Newcastle. I'm 18 years old.
Hi, my name's Dom. I live in Brisbane. I'm 20 years old. I'm a uni student.
I'm a first-time voter.
This is my first time in a federal election, so my first time voting.
Hack. Let's vote.
All right, Chloe and Dom are on the phone now. First to you, Chloe. What did you make of today's interviews?
So I guess I have a lot of close friends who have been affected by mental health. And as they live in a small city, they were lucky enough to have easier access to mental health facilities. And they were given the support network they needed. But I don't think there is enough education surrounding mental health, especially in rural areas. So, yeah, I definitely think that's a priority. But ultimately, I think it's great to see that both Labor and the Coalition are addressing the issue and are moving towards investing larger funds into it.
Right. So do you see them as being fairly evenly matched on mental health?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah, they've got different policies, but I just think it's awesome to see that they are addressing it.
All right. Dom, what do you think?
Hi, Tom. Look, in my community, there is still a huge stigma surrounding mental health. And I'm assuming in a lot of other communities around Australia. And I believe that the better accessibility promised under the coalition with all these new technologies and texting services might be a giant step in overcoming this stigma surrounding mental health.
Yeah, well, it was a clear difference, wasn't it, that they were prepared to outline at this point $30 million in spending on digital mental health services, and Labor didn't really have anything in that space.
Yeah, and I think that it's great that both parties, as Chloe said, are addressing this fact. But just within my knowledge of the power, it's just I'm really thinking that the coalition's got a really strong idea.
All right, cool. Great to speak to you guys. We're talking environment. I know that's important to both of you tomorrow, so look forward to speaking to you both then.
Thanks, Tom.
Awesome.
Thanks.
All right, good on you guys. All right, coming up next after the news, KLP has a new tune from Blood Orange, which I am really excited about. We'll catch you tomorrow with an in-depth look at the environment. I'll speak to you then.